In a science fiction starship, the astronauts were homesick. Just to think that it's springtime back on Earth. You may not immediately see what's wrong with this, so deeply ingrained is the unconscious Northern Hemisphere chauvinism in those of us who live there, and even some who don't. Unconscious is exactly right. That is where consciousness raising comes in. It is for a deeper reason than gimmicky fun that in Australia and New Zealand you can buy maps of the world with the South Pole on top. What splendid consciousness raisers those maps would be, pinned to the walls of our Northern Hemisphere classrooms. Day after day, the children would be reminded that North is an arbitrary polarity which has no monopoly on up. The map would intrigue them as well as raise their consciousness. They'd go home and tell their parents. And by the way, giving children something with which to surprise their parents is one of the greatest gifts a teacher can bestow.
It was the feminists who raised my consciousness to the power of consciousness raising. Her story is obviously ridiculous, if only because the his in history has no etymological connection with the masculine pronoun. It is as etymologically silly as the sacking, in 1999, of a Washington official whose use of niggardly was held to give racial offence. But even daft examples like niggardly or her story succeed in raising consciousness. Once we've smoothed our philological hackles and stopped laughing, herstory shows us history from a different point of view. Gendered pronouns notoriously are the front line of such consciousness raising. He or she must ask himself or herself whether his or her sense of style could ever allow himself or herself to write like this. But if we can just get over the clunking infelicity of the language, it raises our consciousness to the sensitivities of half the human race. Man, mankind, the rights of man, all men are created equal, one man, one vote. English too often seems to exclude woman. When I was young, it never occurred to me that women might feel slighted by a phrase like the future of man. During the intervening decades, we have all had our consciousness raised. Even those who still use man instead of human do so with an air of self-conscious apology or truculence, taking a stand for traditional language even deliberately to rile feminists. All participants in the zeitgeist have had their consciousness raised, even those who choose to respond negatively by digging in their heels and redoubling the offence. Feminism shows us the power of consciousness raising, and I want to borrow the technique for natural selection. Natural selection not only explains the whole of life, it also raises our consciousness to the power of science to explain how organised complexity can emerge from simple beginnings without any deliberate guidance. A full understanding of natural selection encourages us to move boldly into other fields. It arouses our suspicion in those other fields of the kind of false alternatives that once, in pre-Darwinian days, beguiled biology. Who before Darwin could have guessed that something so apparently designed as a dragonfly's wing or an eagle's eye was really the end product of a long sequence of non-random but purely natural causes? Douglas Adams's moving and funny account of his own conversion to radical atheism, he insisted on the radical in case anybody should mistake him for an agnostic, is testimony to the power of Darwinism as a consciousness raiser. I hope I shall be forgiven the self-indulgence that will become apparent in the following quotation. My excuse is that Douglas's conversion by my earlier books, which did not set out to convert anyone, inspired me to dedicate to his memory this book, which does. In an interview, reprinted posthumously in The Salmon of Doubt, he was asked by a journalist how he became an atheist. He began his reply by explaining how he became an agnostic, and then proceeded.
And I thought and thought and thought, but I just didn't have enough to go on, so I didn't really come to any resolution. I was extremely doubtful about the idea of God, but I just didn't know enough about anything to have a good working model of any other explanation for, well, life, the universe and everything, to put in its place. But I kept at it and I kept reading and I kept thinking. Sometime around my early 30s, I stumbled upon evolutionary biology, particularly in the form of Richard Dawkins's books, The Selfish Gene and then The Blind Watchmaker, and suddenly on, I think, the second reading of The Selfish Gene, it all fell into place. It was a concept of such stunning simplicity, but it gave rise, naturally, to all of the infinite and baffling complexity of life.